Up now at the Museum of Modern Art, PS1 in New York, is a show featuring the work of artist Clifford Owens. The show is made up of performance scores. They're like instructions that Owens received from a group of multi-generational African-American artists, including Kara Walker and William Pope L. Here's an example of one of the scores. Be African-American. Be very African-American. I'm Jabulani LaFall, and on today's Central Standard, Clifford Owens will tell us how he created these works and share how the work of performance artists can be helpful to a general community outside the art world. Plus, a look at projects with similar ambitions here in Kansas City. That's all ahead on Central Standard after this hour's news. City, artists have an important role to play. They engage with things that are collapsing. They dig into complicated social issues and make them understandable. They interpret them. They're philosophers. They suggest solutions, not through thinking, but perhaps through feeling. They transmit a different kind of knowledge. They smash their barrier between artist and audience. This is Central Standard. I'm Jabulani LaFall. Today, going inside the mind of a performance art provocateur and a discussion of who's being provoked to create this type of art here in KC, this type of living art here in the metro area. First up, we have a man who doesn't necessarily like being called a performance artist, Clifford Owens, an artist with the gallery On Stellar Rays. He's joining us right now. Welcome.
Well, thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
How come you don't like being called a performance artist?
I don't like labels in general. You know, I'm allergic to labels, I think. And I would describe my practice as transdisciplinary. In other words, I work through media, photography, performance, video art, installation art, interested in language, so writing. And certainly, I guess when I say transdisciplinary, it means to, in a sense, transgress media and transform media and traverse media. So I always get uncomfortable when people say just performance art. You know, it sort of limits my practice and the scope of my ways of thinking about or making art, you know.
And trans versus multi.
That's right.
Gives you that transcendental feel.
That's right.
To,
absolutely.
To your art.
Absolutely.
Giving us a sense of your work, what's the approach and what are the desired results?
It's often... the approach, certainly, as you in your introduction, is to provoke and to try to provoke in thoughtful, productive ways, not simply to make people upset or feel uncomfortable. Although in my performances, that does happen, and with the live work, the live performance work, it's sometimes. Difficult to or impossible to predict the outcome. But I really always think about my work in kind of old-fashioned terms, sort of old-fashioned Dewey terms of art as experience, the experience of doing and undergoing. And this is certainly, this is at, that sort of drives the live performance work that I do. Because the audience is very much in the moment with me, and we're doing and undergoing various actions and gestures.
Well, Clifford, right now we're performing in the theater of the mind, so to speak. So can you describe for our listening audience and for me and for everybody within the sound of both of our voices some examples of your live non-performance art? Performance artwork?
Yeah. Well, currently I have an exhibition, a solo exhibition at... the Museum of Modern Art, PS1, in Long Island City, New York. And the exhibition is called Anthology. And Anthology is kind of a collection of performance art scores, which are instructions for action, written for me by a group of intergenerational African-American artists. As you mentioned earlier, Kara Walker, William Pope Bell, Singing and Goody, Terry Atkins, a whole host of exceptional artists. And the project came about when I was a graduate student at Rutgers University. I was writing my thesis paper, and researching U.S. black performance art. And guess what? There was very little material.
You discovered a dearth, for lack of a better word.
Yeah, a dearth of nothing. And so my idea was I had to create or invent a history that didn't exist. And so I got the opportunity to do this project anthology, and it's an exhibition and also a series of live performance events. And for example, one of the scores reads by Kara Walker, "French kiss an audience member, force them against the wall, demand sex. If the audience / participant agrees to the forced sex act, abruptly turn the tables, assume the position of victim, repeat." William Pope Bell's score is simply complex. Be African-American.
Be very African-American.
We are being very African-American right now, I think, right?
Maybe.
In this conversation.
Perhaps. So you're actually doing
these
instructions, these scores for the performance pieces.
Exactly. And so I interpret the scores as I see fit. So it's all me interpreting the scores. It's not a direct it's an interpretation of the scores. And, of course, the problem with William Pope Bell's score is it really problematizes this notion of, well, what is African-American and identity, and how does one perform that identity, you know? I mean, I suppose in a sense we're always
– I think the key challenge is to be very African-American.
Yes. That's right.
What are the missions behind, you know, creating a body of work like that? And a collaborative body of work like that, and calling it an anthology because it simply comes from nothing and exists from a concept.
Yeah, I mean, the idea, you know, I want to create, again, a history that previously didn't exist, and to make people aware of the sort of rich legacy of U.S. black artists working in contemporary art. And But it's been happening since the 1950s, particularly with this wonderful artist named Benjamin Patterson, who was one of the architects of Fluxus and worked with George Matsunis in the early 1950s to organize some of the first Fluxfest. And Patterson is still alive and well, and he wrote a score for me. So
And what was that score?
It was a graphical score. It was kind of this graphic for a dance piece. And I just titled it One for Clifford Owens. And that score appears in the exhibition as a giant floor piece that the audience can interact with. You can dance on it. And so it's really quite an interesting score. But he did another work in the 60s called Whipped Cream Piece, Lick Piece, in which
literally the woman's laying on the
ground. Yeah.
You got the whipped cream.
That's it. But I thought, my goodness, here's an example of a U.S. black artist in the 1960s making such a radical work. And we understand a lot about U.S. black art. But, I mean, to be quite honest, a lot of U.S. black art or the history of U.S. black art is kind of conservative. And so performance art, again, is about provocation. You know, it's I wanted to, again, create this history that didn't exist. And in 2012, late 2012, early 2013, there'll be a book, my first book, of the project anthology with scholarly texts by two art historians and images from the exhibition. I'll write a piece for the book as well.
Interestingly enough, the images from the exhibition also evoke a response from the audience member, the person looking at the photograph. Mm-hmm. But it's a different response from the people who were actually at the live performance. Can you talk about the difference between that?
Yeah,
sort of multi-layered response?
That's absolutely right. When you the experience of the exhibition at the museum will be vastly different than your experience of being there, you know, as an audience member, as a member of the audience. And so that is sort of the nature of performance art, I think. And in my practice, I'm really interested in creating photographs that function as discrete works of art. They're not documentations of the live performances, but they really do function in the exhibition as discrete works of art. And so, but when you're in the moment, when you're a member of the audience, the experience is vastly different. And of course, we mostly understand the history of performance art through photographs and through film and video. So in the exhibition, it was important that I create images, again, that functioned as discrete art objects, not just as documentations of the performances. So the audience, we've been getting a lot of people coming out to MoMA PS1 for the live performances, and it's really – it's so charged, you know, it's so intense what I'm doing in the project. You know, it scares me sometimes.
So. I bet it does. You're listening to Central Standard on 89.3 KCUR FM, streaming live on KCUR.org. I'm Jabalani LaFall. Our guest is artist Clifford Owens, transdisciplinary artist Clifford Owens. He's in town for a lecture at the KC Art Institute. Clifford, you're here for a Current Perspectives lecture series here. What are your thoughts on the contemporary art world and your place in it?
My place in the contemporary art world in New York, or just
the
in general?
The contemporary art world.
Yeah, I'm often...
I'm going wide on you here.
Yeah, that's wide. That's pretty broad. But I frankly find the art world problematic, you know. I always say I don't live in the art world. I live in Queens, New York. But my position in the contemporary art world in New York is, I think, as a U.S. black artist, perhaps marginal. And some people would challenge that simply because I have an exhibition at MoMA PS1 right now. But the art world really often is not about art. It's about class privilege.
Please elaborate on that.
Well, I think if you sort of think about what constitutes an art audience, you know, who is that? Who are they? From where do they come? And the art world, you know, when we talk about the art world, I think we really are talking about a particular social class, because there is a tremendous amount of money in the art world, in the art system, and it's incredibly difficult and expensive to be an artist in a city like New York. But I don't really, you know, I'm a parent first, you know, I'm an artist, I'm an educator. So I don't really position myself as a kind of, you know, art world dilettante. I like to believe that I try to function on the bounds of the art world, in a sense. But it, you know, the art world, I guess, if you're outside looking in, it's really quite sexy, it's appealing, you know. But once you're sort of in it, it's a really corrupt social network. The museum and gallery system is, in a sense, corrupt as well, I think.
You have to go ahead and follow up on that as well.
Well, I'm going to get in trouble for saying that, but...
What's corrupt about it?
What is corrupt is that it is market-driven. I know that it is market-driven. And if you think about how museums function, how the gallery system functions, what artists get opportunities to exhibit their work, what artists do not have opportunities to exhibit their work. There's a lot of inequality, in, not just in terms of race, but also in terms of gender, also in terms of class. You know, it's a complicated system. I mean, here in Kansas City, I have no sense of what the art world looks like. You know, I've been asking, like, where are the artists? Where do the artists hang out? Where do they live? You know, where can I go and see some contemporary art? So it's hard to speak about. I suppose I would say that there are art worlds, and I would like to think if I function in a kind of art world context, I would like to function and exist in art worlds, not a particular homogenous kind of art world. But again, I think in New York, I'm part of a U.S. black artist community. And, but I don't really have a sense of what the art world is like here in Kansas City. But I'm going to find out soon.
Well, and I think we'll learn later in this hour that
yeah, sure.
The art world in Kansas City is kind of... trans disciplinary. Do you feel, Clifford, as if art has to have a purpose? Do you create for now, or do you create for some time in the future?
I think a little bit of both. Look, if you don't have anything to say, you can't be an artist. You know, to be an artist, you have to have something to say. So I think art should have a purpose. It doesn't necessarily always have a purpose. But I don't think that art, necessarily. Well, yeah, art should have a purpose. It should have purposes, you know, because it functions in different ways for different viewers, you know. So I think that's how I think about it. I'm not a political artist, for example. I'm not sure if art can transform people's lives. I mean, perhaps I'm a bit cynical about what art can do and what it should do. For some people, art is not for everybody. It just isn't, and it doesn't have to be.
And especially not yours. You're in a genre mm-hmm. where that is not particularly accessible or particularly popular. How do you draw the line between what you do and entertainment, provocation versus entertainment?
Yeah, that's a good question. I always like to make a distinction between performance art and the performing arts. And with Rosalie Goldberg, sort of the leading art historian of visual performance art, she calls it visual performance art or visual art performance. And I went to art school. I'm trained as an artist. I'm not trained as an actor or a dancer. So the performing arts are theater, dance, song, etc. And those things are certainly about us. Those things certainly have a certain kind of entertainment value attached to them. But I'm a visual art performance, as a visual art performance artist, I'm interested in images. So I think of my performances as images, not necessarily as a kind of as entertainment. You know, I'm interested in engagement more than I'm interested in entertainment, and I think that is that there's a big distinction there between entertaining and engaging an audience.
Speaking of engaging the audience, Lori on Facebook responds to the piece "Be African American, Be Very African American." We were discussing that score by William Pope L. She writes, "I find it very confusing that everyone wants people to see past skin color and ethnicity, and then statements like that are made. Us poor white people have no clue on how to react anymore." So here's an example of a reaction to that. Mm-hmm. How do you feel about that? And how would you interpret that as an artist?
Well, that's a tough one. Can you read it again?
It's nothing but tough ones.
Okay.
She says she finds it very confusing that everyone wants people to see past skin color and ethnicity, and then statements such as "be African American, be very African American" are made. Us poor white people have no clue how to react anymore, end quote, exclamation point.
Well, I think she's wrong. I don't think that people want to see past skin color. I think the issue is about invisibility. People don't see past skin color. And I don't know a single U.S. black artist who doesn't want to be black. What did Langston Hughes write? Why wouldn't I want to be black? I'm beautiful, et cetera, et cetera. So I don't think that that's true at all. And I don't think that U.S. black artists want people to look past skin color. You know, it's not that simple.
Do you think the whole idea of looking past skin color and seeing merit is kind of a utopian idea?
Absolutely. I mean, this nonsense about a sort of this nonsense of being post-black. U.S. black artists have always been post-black. U.S. black artists were post-black before Barack Obama became post-black, post-racial, however they're characterizing his race or his representation. So I don't want people to see past my skin color. I want people to make a frank acknowledgement of my difference. And in that difference, we can begin to have a real conversation about what it means to be human. you know.
And speaking of which, do you feel like you have a contractual relationship with an audience or a symbiotic relationship with the audience? How does the audience play in your approach, and do they become part of the artwork?
Absolutely. There is an implicit contract in the performances. I mean, in fact, there's this book, Contract with the Skin, Performance Art Masochism in the 1970s by Kathy O'Dell. And she writes about the contract, the implicit contract of a performance art work in which the artist and the audience, there is a contract there. And in my work, I like to bring the audience into the experience of the performance. And the contract, it's not necessarily stated, but the understanding of the contract is when we're in a room together and I'm making a performance, we are responsible for each other. And that there is a kind of, in my work, I mean, especially think about the Kara Walker score in which I'm going up to strangers and French kissing them.
And asking them for sex,
absolutely.
And then, when they oblige, flipping it on them.
That's right.
What happened in a situation like that? Did anyone oblige and then you flipped it on them? What was the audience reaction?
I just sort of French kiss the audience members and perhaps fondle them. It's terrible. This is public radio. I'm not sure how much I can talk about this. It's public art. But I've never had sex. I've never performed a sex act in that score. And there are many reasons why. I mean, if you're familiar with Kara Walker's work, a lot of her imagery is about this. Well, you know, you're familiar with her work.
Yeah, I am.
Yeah, and how would you describe some of the imagery? You know, it's
provocative.
Yeah, it's a lot of sort of rape imagery. And when I do the score, I'm very... as an African-American male, as a black man in a predominantly white audience, performing for a predominantly white audience, I'm very aware of what would it mean for me to force sex on a stranger? I mean, there's a way in which I can play into a certain kind of stereotype of the, you know, oversexed black man. You know, but I choose not to do that in that performance.
And outside of the gallery, there are two other elements, your wife and the cops.
My wife and the cops. Yeah. I'm recently divorced, so we just would have to deal with the cops.
Right. Not the wife. You have another audience member who is reacting to some of the things you were saying today here. Speaking of audience interaction, Mike from Overland Park says he is offended by your comment that the art world is made up of corrupt and market-driven policies. What's wrong with that, he asked. And he says it seems terribly naive not to want people to invest in the work of artists. I think you might need to clarify what you meant by market-driven for Mike here in Overland Park.
Yeah, I mean, sorry, Mike, I didn't mean to offend you, but let's think about this a bit more critically and think about the fact that you can go to an art fair and purchase a piece of art that you can place over your couch. That's market-driven. That's not about making work that challenges or work that functions sort of as critical, perhaps radical ways of thinking about making art and thinking about audience. And it's not when I talk about corruption, what Mike's experience is as an artist, if he in fact is an artist, but just look at what happens in art schools and think about the pedagogy of artist. I mean, I suppose I'm perhaps so cynical because I live in the, you know, art capital of the world.
Well, yeah. let me ask you this. With art education, is that then necessary? Is it a paradox to have art education? You have formal art training. You're going to speak at an institute tonight of people in school for art. I mean, a lot of filmmakers say, just do it. Don't go to film school.
Sure.
So talk about that. Isn't that sort of a paradox?
Well, artists are intellectuals. You know, art is about ideas. And art has a history. So there is a reason to go to art school. When you get to the graduate level, which my friend refers to as finishing school for artists, you really are being primed to go out there into, you know, into the art market you know. And there is a great deal of money to be made as an artist. And I know artists in New York City who are personal friends who are enormously successful commercially and, you know, critically successful artists. And I think, I mean, again, I'm talking about corruption in terms of what is given value in the art world, you know. How value is assigned, through what means, you know, value is assigned to certain works of art, and other works of art just kind of get looked over, you know.
And so it's a problem of valuation.
I think so, in part, in large measure, it's a problem of valuation. Yeah, it's complicated. I wish I could have fleshed this out a little bit more.
Speaking of valuation, later this spring you'll be on the jury for the third, a national jury for the third round of the Rocket Giants, Rocket Grants application for projects similar to yours. Mm-hmm. What do you look for in the work of peers and up-and-comers who are artists?
Yeah, well, it's about the quality of the work. I'll be thinking about that. Apparently, one thing I have to think about on the Rocket Grant panel is how the project proposal interacts with the community here in Kansas City. So it needs to be an audience-sensitive work, and it has to have a certain quality. The work has there should be a certain quality to the work, and the proposal should be have a certain kind of clarity, you know, should be well articulated. So I'm sure I'll read Grant's proposals and look at work that I may not personally respond to, but for the purpose of the panel, there are certain standards which I'm not aware of right now that the organization will require me to consider when I'm looking at the panelists' work. But I think it's a really amazing opportunity to give funding to artists here in Kansas City to make sort of public projects.
Are you going to take an academic approach to it if they can make a convincing argument for their work? It's not necessarily based on the wow factor, but a convincing argument?
Yeah, absolutely. 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 And of course, you know, if you see a work that, you know, really impresses you, then that's even better, you know, that it has a visual impact. That's even better. But I really I think it's very difficult for many artists to articulate in writing or in a proposal an idea for a big public project. So if I'm sure that I'll read a lot of successful applications that will be able to do that.
But impress doesn't mean like.
That's right.
Talk about that.
You know, there are some works that are impressive in scale and scope and material use, but may not necessarily be interesting to me. You know, I'm not going to call out any artist here, but there are people who make impressive work, and it does have that wow factor, but it may not really touch my heart, or, you know, be that engaging to me in other ways.
Our guest is Clifford Owens. He'll be speaking today, February 23rd, at the Kansas City Art Institute's H&R Block Art Space at 7 p.m. He's also in town for the Current Perspectives Lecture, as I just mentioned. And we're going to take a brief break. When we return, we'll be speaking with Julia Cole, the Rocket Grants Program Coordinator for the Charlotte Street Foundation, and another Julia Vering, an artist and social worker, and the recipient of the 2011 Rocket Grant. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Central Standard. I'm Jabalani LaFall. In this part of the hour, we're going to learn about a local arts program that, in the tradition of Warhol, provides fuel for thought and allows artists to create outside of traditional galleries or funding parameters. The only real requirement is that the art must have a public life force, and be a public life form. And joining us now to talk about what that means and how local artists are getting involved is Julia Cole, the Rocket Grants Program Coordinator for the Charlotte Street Foundation, and another Julia Vering, an artist and social worker and recipient of the 2011 Rocket Grant. And Joining us once again is visiting artist Clifford Owens with the gallery on Stellar Rays. He'll be speaking tonight at the KC Art Institute as part of KCAI's Current Perspectives lecture series. Julia, tell us about the Rocket Grants program and why it started and who it's for.
The Rocket Grants program is a funding opportunity for artists who live within an 80-mile radius of Kansas City. And it's a program that was put together by the Charlotte Street Foundation in Kansas City and the Spencer Museum of Art in Lawrence. And the funding for the whole program comes from the Andy Warhol Foundation for the Visual Arts, who are an amazing funder because they have a vision that allows for encouraging and supporting all kinds of challenging and unconventional work. And they had this great vision that they could help to support artwork across the nation in places other than New York and Los Angeles that would really kind of integrate with public space and encourage innovative programming. So we have, the grant is available for up to $4,000. Individual artists can apply for it or groups of artists. It may be they write a proposal for a project that will happen over the course of the next year. The work could be something that they're already interested in and working on, or it could be something that's created specifically for this opportunity.
We're going to bring in Julia Very now. Julia V. What does art with a public life look and feel like?
Well, for me, my project involved some senior citizens from the community and as participants, as oral historians, as actors, and the piece was created with them and performed in front of them. So for me, public art in this sense was bringing in a group of women, primarily those that live in a long-term care facility, who really don't have any access to or any day-to-day integration with the art world, and bringing them in as artists themselves.
Making non-artists artists as part of the project and bringing the project to them. When you heard about this Rocket Grants program, what made you decide to enter?
Well, I'd been doing different experimental projects with older adults and sort of doing performance art type work for the last 10 years, but I had never really applied for funding or anything like that or done a project on a large scale at all. So I thought this would be a good opportunity to push my work farther and to really investigate further for me personally what's my relationship with these people as a social worker and as an artist, as someone that's inspired by them. How can I integrate this or try to make sense of it for myself?
We're going to bring in Clifford Owens now, who we want to specify and clarify, will be speaking tonight, 7 p.m., as part of the Current Perspectives Lecture Series at the Epperson Auditorium in the Vanderslice Hall of the Kansas City Arts Institute campus there. What is your perception, Mr. Owens, of art with a public life? How does it look and feel?
Public art, although I think Julia's public art project is very unique and different from the way we would think about public art and how public art might function. I think public art, different than what Julia is doing, is very difficult, because the problem with public art is, what public are you speaking to? Are you speaking to this public, for this public, or on behalf of the public? And that becomes really problematic sometimes. Or the problem is, of course, that quite often public art is for private taste. I think it's very difficult for artists to speak to publics because there's a certain presumption, I suppose, that artists know what the public needs. But Julia's project, to me, sounds much more personal and engages with the public in ways that some public art is not about engagement. It's just about something existing in a kind of space, in a social arena, you know, where it's you become where it's about a kind of disinterested contemplation of an object in a particular space. But this project to me sounds about seems to be more about real engagement with the public, and it's commendable that she'd be able to do something like that. It's very hard.
Was that the case, Julia? Was it for the public, about the public, with the public, so to speak?
Well, I think, again, the public is kind of a vague term, but in terms of the participants, I'd call them, that I was engaging with, it was for them and about them, but it was equally for me and about me personally.
To pare it down, the Rocket Grants program encourages artists to engage in that community and specifies this word public that we're finding such difficulty dialing down into. Engage the public community in meaningful and interesting ways. What's the criteria? Do you narrow it down in the Rocket Grants program, Julia, Cole?
Well, we define what it's not. So
right. And so can we define that now?
Yeah. So we're looking for work that happens outside of traditional arts venues. So that would be outside of galleries, museums, arts districts, theaters, places where people would ordinarily go to see what they think of as artwork. So we're really seeing the whole of public space, anywhere that people go and interact, as a space that artists can engage and encourage people to expand their way of thinking about social issues, about the art world, about possibility, just not to be able to move beyond their expectations of what art is and can be.
We have another public comment from Bonnie and Leavenworth about one of Mr. Owen's comments that art does not influence the lives of others. She disagrees with you, Mr. Owen. She says while her particular point pertains to music, she thinks visual and performance has the potential for reaching a soul and therefore changing lives. What do you say to that?
Well, works of art on a wall or the floor don't speak.
Right.
They don't hug you.
Right.
They don't love you.
Right.
They can perhaps inspire you, but human beings change their own reality. Works of art might ignite or encourage someone to think differently about the world around them. But change takes time, and works of art can change your life, or they can absolutely ruin your life. And I've had the experience of works of art that both had positive influence on me and a very negative influence on me. I just think that we need to be careful not to put forward this sort of romantic, nostalgic notion about what art can do and how it should function. Art is complicated. You know, it's not just having this transcendental experience, you know, staying in front of a beautiful painting and you're going to go out and, you know, save the world. I think that's silly thinking.
Julia, do you agree that this romantic notion of what art can do can be detrimental? Or do you disagree?
Well, I guess, again, my project was a little different, but in terms of changing people's lives, I don't think it was necessarily the work of art itself or the finished project. Like if you'd come into a gallery and look at something on the wall, for me it was part of the process of making this project that I think affected people in pretty important ways.
Give us a strong example of that.
One of the ladies that was an actor in the project, well, several of them, but she in particular has some cognitive issues, has some dementia. So when I did some of the early screenings, I wasn't sure if she was going to recognize herself, and she in fact did not always recognize herself in the video. And so when I did the final performance, and she has a particularly emotional part in the video where she does talk about losing someone that she really loved. So at the end of the performance, she came up to me and gave me a huge hug, and she had tears in her eyes, and she told me that I made her feel like a real person, which to me was more than I had ever expected to do with this project. The ultimate goal, I guess.
And that's very profound. But beyond that, what have been the results of your work in terms of visibility in the community?
Well, right now you can watch the video. The project is called You Live Here Too. You can watch it online, and I'm going to have DVDs available at the Charlotte Street Foundation office. And
we also have a link available on our website at kcur.org. Right. When you hear this example, Clifford Owens, of one of the actors literally in her piece saying, "Your work made me feel like a real person," does art, though, in fact, bring a human element from the creator to the receiver, to the recipient?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, perhaps what art does is it shows us who we are. We just didn't recognize it until we had that experience of a particular work of art, you know. And I don't want to – that was a really beautiful and powerful thing you just talked about with that performer in your project. And I think that those things do happen, and people do have those experiences. But I think, Julia, what you did is you brought something out of her that was already there, and that is what art does. You know, you made her realize – perhaps something that she had forgotten, which is a very powerful thing, you know. That's what I was saying before about art being a catalyst for change. The work of art itself doesn't produce change. People produce change.
Julia Vering, earlier in the program, we asked Clifford to define performance art. Can you now define that for us?
I'm not sure that I'm really an expert.
From your opinion.
Okay.
From your opinion. Because you did it.
Yeah. For me, I'm actually a very shy, introverted person, and I was forced to take acting lessons as a child because of shyness. But for me, there's this draw to engage, I guess, with an audience in the moment in a way that performance art allows you to do that I don't really see with other genres of art.
You're listening to Central Standard on 89.3 KCUR on your FM dial, streaming live on KCUR.org. I'm Jabalani LaFall. Our guests today are Julia Cole, the Rocket Grants Program founder for the Charlotte Street Foundation, and another Julia Vering, an artist and social worker, the 2011 Rocket Grant recipient. And we're also joined by visiting artist Clifford Owens, who will be speaking tonight at the KC Art Institute as part of that institute's Current Perspectives series. He's from the gallery Stellar Rays and has a exhibit up now at MoMA, the Museum of Modern Art in New York, out in Long Island, the PS1 Gallery. What would you say, Julia Cole, is the state of performance art today in KC? And did you bring Clifford Owens to town to shake things up?
Sure. I mean, I think that we have so many excellent examples of artists who are in the performing arts. We have a really wonderful array of different skill sets, wonderful music and theater.
But not performance art.
Exactly. And I think, if you don't mind, I'd like to put this in a really little context here. I think Clifford talking about the sense of different art worlds, and I tend to think of this as a single world with many different niches in it, kind of like an ecological system. And the different forms of art making are all relevant and important, and they all contribute in different ways to our culture. And I think looking at what might be called performance art is really developing a different niche, a different place in that arts ecosystem. And so I think that we do have artists who are pushing the boundaries in Kansas City, and it's not the easiest form of art to develop with an audience that's not familiar with it, because it's not always comfortable, it's not always easy to understand, it's something that you have to connect with in a different way. And so, definitely bringing someone like Clifford to Kansas City and having someone like Julia here in the room is really a way of encouraging artists to stretch their practices or to consider this as a practice.
And having said that, Clifford, one review described your work as hilariously lewd. Mm. So how do you introduce that type of, shall we say, eclectic mm-hmm. approach that you take mm-hmm. that's described as something like that to an onlooker mm-hmm. and introduce it to a ecosystem that didn't particularly have that phylum or species of art
yeah.
to take that metaphor further in the first place?
Yeah.
A foreign concept, if you will.
Yeah, absolutely. I don't know. Look, you know, performance art has been around since the turn of the last century. So it's nothing new, you know. We've sort of revisited performance art in recent years. And one sort of key figure in that, the reconfiguration of performance art, has been Rosalie Goldberg, with whom I worked with in the past for the first Performer Biennial in New York in 2005. Again, I mean, I must sound like such a horrible person today, but I just don't think it is the responsibility of artists to make people interested in works of art. If you don't like performance art, then go look at a painting. If you don't like a painting, go look at a photograph. I don't want to I'm not an advocate of performance art.
Right.
I'm not an advocate of any particular medium or means or mode of artistic expression, you know. The reason that we make art is to be free, and the audience is presumably free to engage with whatever kind of work of art they choose. Is my work hilariously lewd? Perhaps, but it's also very informed, you know, and is aware of the history that precedes it. And like you said earlier, also cognizant of how it will function in the future. But it's very much about being in the present. And with performance art, well, first of all, like I've been teaching for 12 years at the college and university level, and was recently a lecturer in the painting department at Yale University, MFA program. And I was teaching a performance art seminar in the painting department at Yale University.
Speaking of hilariously lewd.
That's hilariously lewd.
Right.
And the work that the students produced was absolutely amazing. There's a way in which performance art, unlike many of the other visual arts, one does not have to apologize for one's decisions. In other words, it is a medium, a form of expression that refuses to be defined. And that refusal to be defined is what precisely defines it.
Julia Verin, do you agree? Take it as I give it. Do you agree that it's not necessarily caring about what the audience thinks, but making a statement?
In a way, I guess I'd be lying if I said I didn't care what my audience thought, especially some of the participants. I mean, I admit some of the participants that saw it, saw the performance, were left with just lots of questions and didn't necessarily understand what it was, because it was abstract and absurd. And I think it takes an audience's willingness to kind of not be able to understand or explain everything the way maybe other art forms can be.
Julia Cole, is this about comprehension or reaction? Particularly the statement that it's not the responsibility of the artist to make people care about art. So from the standpoint of presenting these pieces and presenting the pieces of people that you pick for the Rocket Grants program, is it about reaction, or is it about participation, or is it about comprehension? Are they supposed to understand?
I don't think we can have that expectation. I think there's my personal opinion is that I think artists are the philosophers of our time, and that they pose different difficult questions, they engage people in dialogue, they manifest new possibilities. And so in all of that practice, there's never any kind of guarantee that people, and nor should there be any guarantee that people will understand that there's a drive to really communicate some particular message. I think it's more about destabilizing what you think you know, and having you really seek out the opportunity to expand your way of thinking.
Do you ever get frustrated, Mr. Owens, when you have a performance piece, say, where you're in a room full of naked people and all the audience sees is you in a room full of naked people and not necessarily anything else?
No, I don't get frustrated ever to see naked people in any context.
Right, right.
In fact, that's so interesting because I've since 2008, I've been doing this project called Photographs with an Audience.
Right.
And it started in New York at my gallery, and then I did it during a residency at Chapel Hill. And then I did it for my in conjunction with my first museum solo in Houston at the CAM. And then recently in Miami, I did the project. And that piece is about, well, many things. It's about how we understand performance art through photography, and the fact that I always say that performance art is a form or a formalism of photography. It is a history of photography. And in that project, I'm really interested in the audience performing for the camera and for me. Yeah.
And thank you for performing for us here on Central Standard today. Clifford Owens is an artist who will be speaking as part of the Current Perspective series, that lecture tonight at 7 p.m. in the Epperson Auditorium, Vanderslice Hall, on the Kansas City Art Institute campus. We also have Julia Cole, the Rocket Grants Program Coordinator for the Charlotte Street Foundation, and Julia Vering, an artist and social worker and recipient of the 2011 Rocket Grant. Thank you all for coming on Central Standard
today. Thank you.
Thank you. This is wonderful.
And tune in tomorrow for the Walt Bodine Show with co-host Charles Ferruza. Our show is produced by Andrea Salenzi, executive produced by Bill Anderson, with help from Charlie Upchurch. Kim Noble is our announcer, and Emily Mutert manages our website. Central Standard's intro theme music is by Miles Bonney. What you're hearing now, the outro, is by The Will Knots. Up to Date is next with author Alex George and the Weekend To-Do List. I'm Jabalani LaFall. This is Central Standard. Enjoy your day.